Blog Talk Radio.
Just a step, cried the sad man. Take a look down at the madman. Theater king's on. Silver wings fly beyond reason. From the flight of the seagull come the spread claws of the eagle. Only fear breaks the silence as we all kneel, pray for guidance. We'll be right back.
Hello, my freaky darlings, and welcome to Late Night Poets After Midnight Show, where you get to take a walk on the wild side. If you're into the likes of Ginsberg, Bukowski, Ferlin Getty, Kerouac, and Morrison, then you are on the right night. But please check out our other After Midnight shows. Friday is a split between Crawling Into the Darkness with Pam and Break On Through. Join Aphasiana and Babbler on Saturday as they teach you the fine art of being part sinner, part saint. And Monday is the split between The Hearts of Ellen P. with Victoria and Black Lace Diaries with Mr. M. and Mistress Ross. These shows are designed to shoot in color outside the lines with rich raw emotions tinged with colloquial language, thereby pushing the envelope to expression and opening up new avenues of thought through pen and voice. Now, pull up a chair, relax, and open your minds. I'm Rex, my co-host Pam Ray, and I can't wait to get into and read your words. Hey, Pam. What's doing?
Hello, Rex. Great topic for tonight. Poetry inspired by Oscar Wilde. Always a good choice.
Yes, and the spelling was deliberate. It got people to comment and take a peek, so it did its job.
Absolutely. And sometimes that's just the best way to do things is, you know, grab attention and get people to take a look and, and then let them be inspired from there. So very cool. And definitely looking forward to tonight's poetry, hanging out with you, maybe, another cool poet or two who knows what the night will bring. And Oscar Wilde was definitely an interesting character. He definitely did not fit into any box. And he was a man ahead of his time in thinking.
Well, I went digging. So some of those quotes in there are off the beaten path. There's a lot to play with, so.
Oh, absolutely. And I think that's important when you do a quote contest and you offer up more than one to kind of, dig in deep, go do some research and find those ones that are off the beaten path, because you just honestly never know what will inspire people to write and what people will get from them. I know one certain ones, like the ones about laying in the gutter, were ones that I've seen before, but they're always great to bring back the old and familiar. He also had a really great sardonic sense of wit, like with such quotes as, "I don't want to go to heaven, none of my friends are there."
Yeah, I hadn't seen that one before.
Yeah, that was a good one. Also, another one I thought was kind of witty and fun was, "Only full people are brilliant at breakfast." So, yeah, you definitely had some really clever choices here. And very cool. Did you have a favorite of the quotes, sir?
It's something I came across years ago. What is it? Remember it. Well, I do remember it. I can't remember the... As creative acts, there is no significant difference between art and murder.
That is a good one. I remember that one. Yep. Yeah, that is a good one, given thought to the idea that both the artist and the murderer put deep thought into their masterpieces and careful consideration. And both are, I think it also gives thought to the idea that oftentimes both the artist is an emotionally unstable person. in the way that they lean more toward being emotional than necessarily other type of mindsets. So, but just definitely some really interesting and intelligent quotes. I really liked how he said, you're a prompter 13, the suspense is terrible. I hope it will last.
I don't want to go to heaven. None of my friends are there.
Yep. That was one. That's a really good one. I like that one. Another one I really like is the I am so clever that sometimes I don't understand a single word that I am saying. I like all of his quotes, but there is something about his dry wit that just really, strikes a chord with me.
Yep.
Yeah. So, well, what do you say? Shall we go ahead and get this show on the road?
Yep, let's do it.
All right, here we go. Up first, we have Lies and Shadows of Painted Pinafores Forevermore, Dear Lenore, by Liquid Mind Forever. And Rex, go ahead and give that a read, please.
Yeah. That's a hell of a title. Lies and Shadows of Painted Pinafores Forevermore, Dear Lenore, by Liquid Mind Forever. Midnight Blues Long, Vicky. Let me start that again. Midnight blues long, thick, sticky splashes of mascarad eyelashes. Waspish stinging strings strung once hung, since stung, ghoulish fools unsung. Zeros, clinique, heroes bleak among the meek, seek dots and dashes. Designer batten down the hatches, stormtroopers seeking madorba, facial dung. Golden glowing flesh awash in bronze tone Maybelline. First battalion cover-up. Estee Lauder fragrance, second unit camouflage, the moon cycle marauders, quarterized bloodshot whites, despite whose rites of passage grips a crystal cup, I wash to defy jaundiced nights, singed by firefly wings and nightish garters. Historical epithets smear the grease paint that taints the faint stench of onion in the unholy commune of wax and brow-haired parrots revere the bushy sow. Dove flies to rescue at half past midnight and leaves the cleavage clean. Union of face and body, allotted dominion as opinion, defers and cosmopolitan binds the Tao. Cosmetics, the full-bore squatter over warts and stretch marks in stark contrast to the aristocratic palaver of the smoke-and-puff bolocrats at half past half mat. End poem. All right.
All right. Great read there, Rex. Yeah. I have to agree. This is just a wonderful, dark, ironic humor. I like that she took the quote, what was that? A man's face is his autobiography. A woman's face is her work of fiction. And I like how she delves into the realm of the beauty and makeup companies that have existed throughout the years, and how in order for them to make money, they have convinced women that they need to buy their products to change their face. I like how this really gets into the idea of the commercialism and the expectations that are put on women when it comes to cosmetics and keeping themselves beautiful. I like that she tosses out a lot of famous names here, such as Estee Lauder, Maybelline, Clinique, to remind us that it's not just one company, it's not just one person, but it's a conglomerate of companies and a society in a whole. On a technical level, as always, her inner and end rhyme is just spot on. There's a wonderful flow to this. I really like lines like designer batting down the hatches, stormtrooper seeking mud daub or facial dung, as if, you know, covering one's own skin up is a reason to go to war. And the nod towards the Star Wars stormtroopers I thought were great. Dove flies to the rescue of half past midnight and leaves cleavage clean, union of face and body, allotted dominion as opinion defers and cosmopolitan binds the Tao. I like the reference to how the stock market will oftentimes go up when a product is in demand, and what's more in demand than meeting the expectations of beauty. So just a great write all the way through and very well done.
It's the sharp jab at that, both sides of the equation. Let's see, golden glowing flesh, awash in bronze tone Maybelline. Nice touch with that one. First Battalion cover up Estee Lauder fragrance. Second unit camouflage from Moon Cycle Marauders. I like that one too. And then the thought of the quarterized bloodshot whites, despite whose rite of passage grips the crystal cup, eyewash to defy jaundiced nights singed by firefly wings and nightish garters. On that notion of looking for Mr. Goodbar. And then she hits it again, biting at Cosmopolitan for all the crap they do. And because, hey, they're on the Dow. They got to have their notion to money made. And the only way to do that is to make sure everybody's wearing something of that paint itself. She hits it with grease paint. And the Dove to clean the half past midnight, that was a nice touch too, washing the shit off. But the back end of this, cosmetics, the full bore squatter of a walking stretch mark, in stark contrast to the aristocratic palaver of the smoke and puff bolocrats at half past and half mast. Half past, that second thought to where Dove is, half past midnight, and back inside, and half mast kind of hits on that notion of a wasted evening, because that night looking for the goddess just couldn't get it up. All that work for nothing.
Yep. Good point there. I guess that, you know, that would have been money better spent on the little blue pill rather than the makeup. But great observations there, Rex.
All right, what we got next?
All right. Up next we have Over the Top by Ken Smith. And it goes like this. A majestic Mont Tremblant outside Montreal, the cold climb and the chairlift, in mystic fog curled round giant fir trees caked in snow. A novice skier, I took the kitty trail. My three seasoned friends found a path with challenge. One of the three held all our money. I did not find them till day's end. No lunch in the chalet. No après-ski for me. We went back that summer, rented a hillside cabin. On the summer chairlift, I sat frozen, feeling the distance held high above bare ground. Now, when the cashier at the grocer asks, air miles? I gulp and say, no, I'm afraid of heights. End poem.
I like the humor at the back end of this. After all that, the thought of the chairlift, hey, an easy one, opening up, running down, but hits on that notion of being a novice skier taking a kiddie trail and not being able to find anybody afterward. Why? Well, unfortunately, you gave all the money to one person and they're off somewhere else probably enjoying that money. So you went hungry. Now, there's a big difference between summer and winter when you're hitting those chairlifts because, all right, it's high enough in the winter, but there's a whole hell of a lot of snow beneath you. So you don't really think about it until the snow's all gone. And then you get a real look at just how far and just how rugged that mountainside is below the chair. I like that, but
Absolutely.
Nicely done, Kim. Thank you very much.
Yeah. You know, that was a great, I have to agree, that was a great humorous touch at the end. I also really like how he his descriptions. Mystic fog curled round giant fir trees caked in snow. I thought the word, like, this is a very economical rite, and I like that he used the word caked because it gave that feeling of that really wet, heavy snow that just clings to the trees. That he took a difficult situation and put a kind of put humor into it. Like, it's kind of that whole idea of looking back at an experience, like being left alone all day with no money, you're not able to get that lunch, you know, because, you know, having to go on the kiddie hill. You know, I actually, on a serious note, I actually had a friend, and her kid's okay, but like a few years back when he was about 8 or so, he actually fell off of a ski lift. He must have been a little older than 8. I think he was 10 or 11, but he fell off and shattered his hip bones and his pelvic bone. And he's okay now, but it still was a very scary experience.
Can't supposed to be strapped in nicely, at least hanging on.
Right. Well, I don't think he had straps. But, yeah, he definitely should have been hanging on. But, you know, it's just one of those things that happens. And, you know, thank goodness, you know, he's okay. But I like...
Yeah, that chair lift doesn't look like it's got a... okay. Looks like it's an open air. Where you come
it really
up
is.
And all of a sudden
most
you're pretty much
are.
At ground level ready to ski, and you roll off on the skis and the chair goes away.
Yep. Yeah, most of them do tend to be open. Because you, like you said, you when you reach closer to the ground, you jump. I mean, personally, I've never wished to, never skied. But another part I like about this, that I like about Ken Smith's writing is he does brevities extremely well, and he does put those nice little details that make you think, like, on the summer chairlift, I sat frozen. And instantly there, you know, you connect the frozen with the idea of winter, but because summer is mentioned, you know it's not the same kind of frozen. You know that is that kind of idea of being frozen with fear. And the reality hitting you. So just a very well done.
All right. What's next?
Up next, we have Really Hell or Just Another Night at Home by Darkened Auras. And...
Okay. Is hell really hell, or just another night at home? It is said we all have our demons, but what is never said is we make the world a living hell, like the one within our head. But when we actually do die, we'll go to heaven, right? Because if we go to hell, it's like we're home, just another night. The fiery pits of hell? Have you not yet learned? It can't be any worse than the ways we've all been burned. It's so hard to be a perfect soul within our blood to sin. How will it feel to go to heaven and see your friends that have been cut so thin? Most will be raving it up with Satan getting pissed. And everyone is down here. Is your name on that list? And boom. I like that. What do you got?
Oh, well, yes, this one was definitely enjoyable, great rhyme and flow. I liked the second stanza particularly. So when we actually do die, we'll go to heaven, right? Because if we can go to hell, it's like we're home just another night. Like, what's the point of having a new place to go to if it's going to be the same as the old place. This is wonderful dark humor, but it also, you know, is thought-provoking in its way. I like the use of getting pissed, like as in getting drunk. Most will be raving up with Satan getting pissed, and everyone is down here. Is your name on the list? Like, I like that she ends with, is your name on the list? And that whole idea of, are you going to come to the big party or the small party? So like I said, great dark humor and just very well done.
Well, maybe not the big party. The offering is kind of, hey, come on down. We're partying hardy. Yeah, we might be burning. We might be having our skin peeled off. But, hey, what you going to do? We're living down here, really living.
It's like, you know, come for the barbecue. Come for the barbecue, stay for the hot tub.
Well, you're coming for the barbecue. The main meal is you. We're sticking an apple in your mouth and putting you over a spit.
Yeah, everybody, they just forget to mention that little detail.
And we get to do you every night.
Absolutely.
That was funny. That was actually two prompts. I don't want to go to heaven. None of my friends are there. And we are each our own devil, and we make the world ours. But, the humor in this is stark. Right.
It is. Yep. I have to agree. Ryan Dry. And I like that she wrote to two different prompts, but blended it nicely. Like, there was no point in which you felt like one prompt was forced into the book. You know, you could see the inspiration of both, and it worked really well.
Yep. All right.
All right. Well, since Victoria is listening in until her sleep medicine kicks in, I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to put her poem up and
getting
I'm going to go ahead
early,
and give it
huh?
a read. What's that?
She's getting stoned early. It's only 10 o'clock
she
out there.
She is, yeah. She's got some of the good stuff she needs to share.
Uh-oh. Are we opioiding?
All right. This is The Personal Portrait by Victoria Frost, and it goes like this. Hours have been spent upon the delicate black painted lines upon my lids, blending out the brown hues to make green eyes seem amber. Illuminate the joy that beams from my cheeks with each rose-tinted smile. The premature ashing of my grave that weaves its way into my brow are brushed away in tinted powders, fine lines moisturized with fountains of youth meant to maintain my appearance 24 hours at a time. A bit of bronzer along the bones of my face to hollow my cheeks and hint at a sun I actively avoid. No one wants a porcelain doll. Not when my age is shown as cracks upon my surface, webbing their way across my skin. I need more moisturizer, a bit more foundation to build the base on which my story will be painted upon. A beautiful facade, reminder of a dream, the way a woman plays pretend, ignoring the creeping time that peeks out one strand of hair at a time. One day as I paint my face, my fingers find more places to linger, more creases that cannot be pressed out, and I attempt to make a promise that I am not past my prime. There is still youth behind my tired eyes and the baggage that I hold beneath them. There is still honest joy in my smile that has not been chipped away, one horrible experience at a time. Making me distrustful of my peers and good that surrounds me. Kindness still dwells deep in my bones as I gaze upon the growing lines of the men I run alongside, attempting to watch their stride in heels that make my feet ache. Wave away their own dismissal of me for a face that is not as pretty as it once was. Push up my breasts, which have started to succumb to nursing and the ever-steady pull of gravity. It is not my role to deteriorate, lest I too be forgotten, shoved into a corner where my mind is left to rot. I am not here to show my wisdom within my wrinkles, but surprise society with my delightfulness. And when I have become too worn to bear, then I too will be shoved into the corner while the wise men sit passing along their knowledge to the hungry generations. End poem.
Great read, Pam. The personal portrait. You know what? Between that title and the voice in this, it kind of hits me up with that sort of picture of Dorian Gray except on the other side of the table. And like liquid, Victoria delved into the thoughts of a man's space is autobiography, a woman's space is her work of fiction, and went along the same line, but went a little deeper, the sort of actually rolling into, let's see, where was that? Hours have been spent upon the delicate black painted lines upon my lids, blending out the brown hues to make green eyes seem amber, illuminate the joy that beams from my cheeks with these rose tinted smiles. Went into the full order of how it works, the premature ashing of my grave, I like that, the tinted powders, fine lines moisturized with fountains of youth, meant to maintain my appearance 24 hours at a time. There is some humor in this too, but it does hit on the truth of let's see. A bit of bronze along the bones of my face, the hollow of my cheeks, and hint at a sun I actively avoid. Nice touch. And no one wants a porcelain doll, not when my age is shown as cracked upon my face, upon my surface, webbing their way across the skin. I need more moisture. But I like that porcelain doll angle. It brings to face that which you see. The porcelain doll has been around for a long time. It kind of, as it ages, the paintwork gets a little, not so much crusty, but starts showing its wear in cracks and lines. That was a clever reference point to play off of. And then as well, each day I paint my face, my fingers find more places to linger, more creases that cannot be cracked down. And the thought I attempt to make a promise to myself. Then I thought, hey, there's still a use in here. I'm not as old as everybody else. But then also the sort of a little bit of humor wrapped in here. Push up my breast, which voice started to stumble the nursing, and the ever steady pull of gravity. Another bit of truth, but also a bit of humor. And what have you got for this?
Great comment there, Rex. And I have to agree, there is a sense of this is a powerful write. It's emotive, and I think that's in part because she chose to go with the first person point of view. She chose to say it from her point of view, as the struggles of an individual woman who looks in the mirror and sees herself aging. I like how she describes in the first couple stanzas the little tidbits of right with fountains of youth. Can you hear me?
Yeah, off and on.
Okay. Let me try this again. Can you hear me better this time?
Yes.
Okay. I like that she did this by the first-person point of view, from the view of a woman looking at her own face, looking at how she sees herself. I like the little tidbits of humor, such as meant to maintain my appearances fine lines moisturized with Fountains of Youth meant to maintain my appearances 24 hours at a time. And that just, you know, gives a nod to the idea that we will go for those makeups. We will pay extra for those beauty supplies that are meant to last as long as we are supposed to last. I'm thinking here. Okay, another part I really appreciate is that it goes into the inner beauty. This is a woman looking in the mirror, and she's seeing those lines, but she reminds herself she still has an honest joy. She has a good heart. She has an inner beauty, an appreciation for life that has not been destroyed by the ugliness around her. And then near the end, it speaks, and I did like the push up my breast part. I have to say, God bless the 1990s and the push up bra. That was a good year for women everywhere who needed a little extra lift. And I'm sure the men weren't complaining either.
But considering Victoria and her gothic angle, she's probably doing corsets.
we all know that, Rex. You're not saying anything we didn't already know.
I hadn't had a thought to think about it until right this second, so.
yep, black lipstick, corsets, black lace, all that fun stuff, you know, and... But I like how this message in that.
Yeah, she says, gave us great support for the whatchamacallit. But yeah, I'm not wrong. Hello.
All right. Well, great poem. And I'm glad she was inspired to write. All right. Up next, we have The Devil Within by Randy G. Rex, go ahead and give that a read for us, please.
All right. The Devil Within by Randy G. Too many people's lives are beaten down and dreary. Someone else's fault, so goes the conspiracy theory. Void of any self-evaluation leads to continued drama. Never seeking counsel, did trauma. Existing in a world that is filled with turbulent unrest, responsibility and reason is hard for them to digest. After all, how can they be expected to overcome fate? Just victims of circumstance in their insulated state. They search for a scapegoat, first available fall guy, to absorb all the blame when everything goes awry. It should be so obvious that they're above reproach, independent thinkers without any need for a coach. Oblivious to the fact that this is not lasting forever, their bubble bursts, exposing they are not so clever, as reality setting in, overcoming their magic spell, revealing they're the devil, creating this private hell. End poem. Oh, that one's an easy thought to do, decipher as, we are each our own devil, and we make the world our hell. Nicely done, Randy. All right, Pam.
All right. Great rhyme and flow. Wonderful look at how we oftentimes try to point the finger at other people for our own shortcomings, for what we our own problems that we created. Great write and very well done.
Boy, it kind of hits on a note of all of what's going on today. Hey, why accept responsibility when somebody else can put the blame for you? Hey, you know what? When that bubble does burst, there's going to be a lot of shit flowing downhill and a lot of crying because the shit's coming right back to them. One of those little fairy tales. Hey, you reap what you sow. And you know what? back in tri-count. Nicely done, Randy. Thank you very much. Boy.
All right. And up next, we have What a Waste to Die by Jack Brando. And I see Babbler on the board. So hello, Babbler. It's good to see you. And the poem goes like this. What a waste to die, inevitably, inevitable it is, yet others give it a try, neurosis ever blinding. Do we dare reveal our souls tripping, stripped, and longing, nothing left to peel? The layers of our mind lost in apparitions, the Western gurus label our conditions. We swallow our suspense in gels and calves alike. We run the night into the day, disguised amid the spike. What a waste to die, I say, forever in the day, if only we had the sorcery to make it go away.
Great read, Pam. I like that thought right in the middle. The Western gurus label our conditions, because he hits on the notion of a neurosis up top, and then at the bottom, forever and a day, if we only had the sorcery to make it go away. I kind of hits on the same notion with the Western gurus. The ever-present psychological and psychiatrical notions of, hey, we have to talk about everything. And you know what? If you don't bear it and share it, then it's not real. So there is this kind of notion here that actually sometimes some things don't come by way of other people's thoughts. Sometimes they do. There are those who actually do need it. But to actually put a thought to the fact that, yeah, everybody needs it kind of deters the fact, you know what? Sometimes you just got to live. And the only way to live is to actually do, fail, pick yourself up, and dust yourself off. Hey, you know what? So what, you fail? Big deal. It happens. Everybody fails something at least once. And more often than not, at least hundreds of times during their lives. So it's not a big deal. It shouldn't be a neurotic phase that, oh, I can't stand it no more. I need some help. Give me some pills. And Pam, what about you?
Oh, well, I really liked this brevity. I like that it gives voice to the thought that that we're always searching for that fountain of youth, always searching for that fight against death, that sorcery that will keep us alive. I really like the line. Well, I like how there's inner and end rhyme, and our souls tripping, stripped, and longing, nothing left to peel. The layers of our mind lost in apparition. And I thought nothing left to peel was a nice way to describe it, because to me it feels like not only nothing new left to discover, like, but you know, we peeled away all the layers, all the potential. So just really thought-provoking, right, and very well done.
Well, where would you like to go next?
All right. Up next, did I grab the next one? I'm not sure. You know what? I'm going to go grab one of our SoundCloud rights, I think. let me find one of those. And where's that? I know it's here somewhere.
In the middle, I think.
All right, there we go. Yep. All right. And up next, we have Wedged Between Nantucket and Nepal by Eric Svensson. And we have a recording for that, so here we go.
Wedged between Nantucket and Nepal, born of leprechaun daddy and goblin mammy, nurtured in the evergreen hearts of the world, Northern Hemisphere ugly duckling became a flamin', blamin', brilliant wit. Comet streaks ignite velvet nights, leave illustrious tales in its wake. Media rains, meteor showers in protest. Critics cower, not another protege. Rolling in clover, white cliffs of Dover, far from leprechauns kissing Lily Marlene underneath lamplights. Less is more. Simple tastes had a field day. Questioned Victorian corsets and courtship. Innate sense of observation bequeathed to all evergreen heart foundlings. Intuition ever always comes to fruition. Dear darling Hamlet, get a grip. Brevity is the soul of wit. Simplicity's duplicity. Do what you do, do well. Be the best buttercup munchkin you can be. Ireland's little people live by this rule. Kiss the Blarney Stone, laddie. Dream with Susan Boyle. Chase windmills with the man of La Marche. Like a circle in a spiral, wit never slips a disc, nor does his master's voice ever scratch. Simplify, identify, skip with Julie Andrews through the Alps. When the dog bites, when the bee stings, when I'm feeling sad, I simply remember my favorite things, and then I don't feel so bad. From Nantucket to Nepal, the evergreen heart of the world, still on bucket list, got to kiss the Blarney Stone, meet Oscar Wilde's ancestry. Well, that's simple enough taste, isn't it? End poem.
Great read, Eric. Thank you very much for the SoundCloud. It is truly appreciated. And Eric took, I have simple taste. I am always satisfied with the best. All right, Pam, what do you got? There's a lot in this one.
Well, I really like the way that he pays tribute to Oscar Wilde and his personality and his Irish heritage. I thought there were some wonderfully clever lines in here. Far from leprechauns kissing Lily Marlene underneath lamplights, less is more, simple taste had a field day, question Victorian corsets and courtship. I like that that line there pays tribute and gives a nod towards that that Oscar Wilde wasn't traditional in his how he was expected to act in Victorian culture. I did like the part that said, dream with Susan Boyle, chase windmills with the man of La Marche, like a circle and spiral and never slips a disc, nor does his master's voice ever scratch. You know, I like that whole idea of chasing your dreams. I still think that when Susan Boyle sung on that, when she first came on and sang and shocked everybody, was one of the most moving moments in that American Idol show. You know, this is just a wonderful write. And like I said, it pays tribute to Oscar Wilde and all his delightful imperfections and all the ways that he was, as I mentioned earlier, a man ahead of his time. So beautifully written and very well done.
Yep, boy, does he hit on a bunch of things. He hits on the clover, hits on the the evergreen heart of the world. I like that first stanza, born a leprechaun daddy and goblin mummy. Nice touch to open up with. And then the back end, northern hemisphere, ugly duckling became a flaming, blaming, brilliant wit. Nice touch with that that finishing line. What else we got? Rolling in clover, white cliffs of Dover. And you hit the line with kissing Lily Marlene and the corsets and courtship. But again, drops into more humor a little bit. Intuition ever always comes to fruition. Dear darling Hamlet, get a grip. Brevity is the soul of wit. And then next one down. Be the best buttercup munchkin you can be. Ireland's little people live by this rule. Kiss the blondest of laddie. But I think one of the better ones was on the back end of this. From Nantucket to Nepal, this evergreen heart of the world still on bucket list. So while dentistry, well, that's simple enough taste, isn't it? A nice touch there to the quotes. But Eric, if you're going to Ireland, remember, the Irish go up and pee on the Blarney Stone. So put somebody else's lips there first. You've already got plenty of quip and quiver in your voice to make it work without kissing the Blarney Stone. All right, Pam.
All right. Up next we have Wild About the Guy by Weaver of Dreams. And we have a recording for that. So let me find that. And here we go.
I was talking to a member of my team one day. He seemed pretty rough and, dare I say, hungover. I asked how he was feeling, as any caring boss should. Thinking he'd not last a day, he barely looked sober. He said, "Kate, I feel so low, I'm lying in the gutter." I had to. I quoted that famous line that never jars. Once said by my hero, Mr. Oscar Wilde, I ad-libbed, "We're all in the gutter, but some are looking at the stars." I wasn't aware that he was passing on this line as being mine, until he told me how I'd impressed with my wit and erudition. I quickly wrote a memo to exonerate myself from plagiarism. It transpired no one had even known I put myself in that position.
Great read, Dream Weaver. We were doomed. Thank you very much for the sound grab. Really appreciate it. now that picture, boy, is that hell of an office party gone wrong. What do you got, Pam?
Oh, I enjoyed this. I'm always glad when Weaver is inspired. And I like how I can only guess and that this must be a true story. And, you know, it's humorous in the whole idea of sharing a quote with somebody and then getting the credit for it and then having to send out, I really like that. I quickly wrote a memo to exonerate myself from plagiarism. It transpired. No one had even known I put myself in that position. Wonderful humor. I like the straightforward style. And I would say, yep, that was probably one hell of an office party. So very well done.
Yeah, the picture is classic, and this fits the picture so well. But that back end, I like the humor all the way through this, especially tossing out that line from Wild itself. And then having to actually, hey, that isn't my line. I don't want to be plagiarized here. It belongs to Oscar. And I need to find out that nobody actually knows. So, wow, all that worry, and it needn't have been shown. Teach us to overthink.
Absolutely.
All right, where are we going next?
All right, up next we have Things by Babbler, and goes like this. I've never penned a convincing work of fiction. My strongest pieces warp their roots into truth, biting and harsh, masticating fragile shells I built around myself cutting into the pulpy center, even if the enamel is polished shit. People love the taste of blood. They savor it. Vampiric readers sliding tongued pupils greedily along the lines, hunting for a vein, an artery, a jugular, cutting their teeth on my pain. Easy stories aren't up to snuff. Halcyon days spent in spring drinking from streams and listening to birdsong. Not interesting. They want the underbelly growls call for wounds to laugh at, slurping at the edge of my scarcely stored secrets, freshly butchered with a little garish harpy in a pearled necklace, her beak poised to rip a throat out. By now my hard past should have eroded the corners of my mouth and eyes, and yet I appear, crafted from porcelain, sculpted granite, barefaced alabaster, incisors peeking out from unrouged lips, waiting. Did he weep? Did my storied past break him? Tell me, cut himself on the razor-sharp words, red rivulets running down to where my lips brush along the Adam's apple. He looks today like he has lived every day, every minute, every hour of both of our lives. Is it my fault that his mind deceived him? How can I look so young, so sweet, and live through all the horrors I've seen? The truth is looking him dead in the eye, or it was until I found his neck. End poem.
Great. That's a great read, Pam. Boy, that was sharp and pointed, and quite a different take on a man's faces, autobiography, a woman's faces, her work of fiction. That was delving into the darker aspects of having quite the story behind the youthful exterior that actually works its way out. And well, there is that notice of people love the taste of blood they savor, vampiric readers, sliding tongue pupils, greedily along the lines, hunting for a vein, an artery, a jugular, cutting their teeth on my pain. there is that note. Yeah, people like to get into, like everybody rubbernecking past the traffic accident. They want that underbelly, that touch of, yes, is there death over there? Well, just make sure it's bloody for me. I can take that. Freshly butchered with a little garnish, harpy in a pearl necklace, her beak poised to rip her throat out. Damn. Sharp lines, and there's the hit on the notion of how it is easier for people to look down their nose and, yeah, tell me more, but kind of cringe and say, is all of this true, or I'm just getting a better story, until they find the bites in that last line. I thought that was good. The truth is looking him dead in the eye, or it was, until it found his neck. All right, Pam, your turn.
Yeah, this is definitely, Pings is a great title for this. It is a sharp write. It's hard-hitting. It's visceral. It does remind us that oftentimes people search out that ugly poetry, that brutally honest poetry, that emotional poetry about your pain, because, as you mentioned, Rex, they turn their heads at the car accident. It also makes me think about how oftentimes when we read a poem, we think we know somebody, and it's so easy to fall in love with a poet because you've read one of their poems and to think you know them, to think and to take on this savior-like complex, this complex that here is a hurting woman, here is an innocent woman who's been through a brutal life, and I can sweep in and I can save her. But the thing is she doesn't need saving. You're the one that needs saving because she's about to rip out your jugular. I like the dark sensuality with in this. Red rivers running down where my lips brush along the Adam's apple. Today, like he has lived every day, every minute, every hour of both our lives. And to me, that speaks on the observations made. When you look at somebody's comment and you realize that they're feeling the emotion within your right more than you actually are. And that there's this kind of, this kind of almost a sense of pride in realizing that your words has ripped somebody's heart out. So I just think this is a powerful rite and very well done.
Well said.
Danke.
Better.
All right. And, I see Eric in the room. Good to see him. So, hello, Eric. And up next we have I Forgot to Remember by Tomahawk. And Rex, go ahead and give that a read for us.
I Forget to Remember by Tomahawk. You know, I'm just so damn clever that it most surely should be a crime. Do I ever have any regrets? No, never. I'm just an average Joe doing time. Of course, you know, I'm a pro's pro, diamond of diamonds, for sure. I'm always all go and never show. My intentions and deeds are pure. A paragon of virtue, salt of the earth. Women love me, men revere my ilk. Somehow, I had to be royalty by birth. My reputation is as smooth as silk. Oh, please, don't think I'm a fink. I'm a kind-hearted, generous bloke. By any standards, I think I'm in the pink. I'm so rich in virtue, I'll never go broke. When it comes to brains, I'm Joe Einstein. I do the New York Times crossword puzzling in 5. Let's face it, folks, there ain't no one so fine. I'm by far the most gifted SOB alive. So when I engage in reverie, I always say to me, don't let all your success go to your head. I just get down on one knee and say, God bless me. Then I'll have a belt and go self-satisfied to bed. Oh, it's really not easy being the idol of millions. I'm the situation from January to December. A most humble person despite all my billions. But the trouble is, I always forget to remember. And on. And Pam,
great read there.
That's got to be on that line about not believing himself with the stuff he muttered.
Yes, it was. Yeah, that
right,
was, well, first of all, great read there, Rex. You know, it's funny. I really enjoyed this. I was actually one where I was on mute laughing out loud. And I remember that we had another show where Tomahawk did this humor right, where he pulled off the whole I'm so full of myself personality. That, you know, I mean, wow, the way this guy pulled it off, and I noticed he had to put as one of his tags that this was fiction because, well, he just, like I said, he pulls off that personality so well that you could almost believe that he is actually this conceited. But I like the humor in this. I like the, you know, full of themselves attitude. I like that he put in, I'm Joe Einstein. I thought that was really clever. When it comes to brains, I'm Joe Einstein. I do the New York Times crossword puzzle in 5. Let's face it, folks, there ain't no one so fine. I'm by far the most gifted SOB alive. And the fact that, you know, Joe, it made me think of as if somebody had accidentally combined Joe Dirt from that movie, Joe Dirt, and Einstein together, and you know, just a great take on that chosen prompt great rhyme and flow. And, you know, he really, like I said, he caught so well that full of himself attitude of someone who just thinks they're hot shit. So very well done.
Well, damn. I ain't got nothing left to say since you took it all. But he did use that Joe line twice. He finished that first stanza. I'm just an average Joe doing time. That kind of hits on that notion, doing time. All right, if you're doing time and about the crime in the second line, so this kind of hits on the notion of full of bluster behind bars, a diamond of diamonds, all go, no show. I had to be royalty by birth. My reputation is smooth as silk. Kind-hearted, generous bloke. So rich in virtue, I'll never go broke. Boy, it does pass on that the thought of, damn, I'm buttering somebody up for a good something or else. And I like that thought. I just get down on one knee and say, God bless me. Yes, the bluster is perfect in this. It is it's serious self-indulgence and a lot of fun.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, that part of God bless me just really cracked me up. So great comment there, Rex. And let's see what I grabbed. All right, did I grab anything? Sometimes I do not. I did. All right. Up next we have Damage, Delight, Sigh, and Step by Duncan Ross Bell. And it goes like this. My thoughts die on the bedroom floor, my bed made in the mud. I'll ask me what I'm fighting for, no answers in the flood. So I'm ratting the damage, I'm embracing the savage, we eat what we ravage. A light, a spirit for my fall, a sigh into the face of innocence, a portrait on my wall, a step into the state of dissonance. I figured out my status quo. I figured out my right. The better is the less I know. I'll walk without a sight. So I'm ratting the savage. I'm embracing the ravage. We eat what we damage. Delight. End poem.
And Duncan took, we are our own devil and we make our own hell. Damn. So I'm rating the damage, I'm embracing the savage, we eat what we ravage. Boy, there's a notion of running through life full pace, not giving a damn about anything. And again, that thought, a portrait on my wall, I'm going back to that thought with Victoria of, I can't remember it, I just did it, Dorian Gray. And I figured out my status quo, I figured out my rights. The better is the less I know, I'll walk without a sight. A nice touch. Hey, if you're blind to all the damage you're doing, you can actually thoroughly enjoy yourself because, hey, you don't give a damn. And then to finish out, the enjoyment with delight was a nice touch as well. Well, Rip Duncan, thank you very much. And Pam?
Oh, this is awesome. I really like how he chose to emphasize quite a bit of this by putting the lines in a parenthesis, giving thought to the idea of, I guess to me, I think of the idea of the thoughts inside someone's head that they don't necessarily want vocalized. I really like how he has hard-hitting rhymes. I think Duncan probably writes rap, or at least he should, because he has a gift for that kind of rhythm. I did like a portrait on my wall, a step into the state of dissonance, and how you mentioned the portrait of Dorian Gray. I have to agree, that's a great nod to that. So I'm rating the savage, I'm embracing the ravage, we eat what we damage. There's this whole idea of getting pleasure out of that which we hurt, that which we destroy. you know, and wallowing in our own mud, in our the dirt that we have created. I like that this gives idea to the whole idea of laying down in the gutter and looking up at the stars. And I thought by putting the word delight by itself was a great way to end, because I felt like that was a play on words, the use of a word to describe the idea of looking up at that light, at the starlight. So beautifully written and very well done.
Well said. All right, where do we go next?
All right. Up next we have Nightlife by Arcana Amore. And go ahead and give that a read for us, please.
Nightlife by Arcana. I have waded through so many lifetimes. I've seen the world bleed in bitter bloodshed, with bombs that blossom into beautiful blitzes, a musical myriad of misanthropic melodies. My immortality melts into the nightlife. They flock towards me as sheep to slaughter, with their gore that feeds my eternal vigil, dripping from fangs that taste demise. I dance the darkness in deadly discord, dwelling beyond the twilight of drowning dreams. My stealth stalks the steps of strangers. A crimson line sweetly smear my lips. Their shallow struggles sate my hunger. I feed on the visceral fix of a fading pulse, haunting the quiet places of solitude with leather-clad lachrymose laments. My undead life, the curse of everlasting disdain, to ever forage brooding bastions of blood that stare into my cold, ravenous eyes, reflecting their ebbing mortal cries. I swim seas of shade through spattered screens that pierce the night with pleading passion, though meeting each moment with bitter regrets, my existence decrees I must always forget. And poem. And Arcana took again, we are each our own devil, and we make the world our hell. All right, Pam.
Suck your blood. There you go. That was my Dracula imitation. Now, I thought this was a wonderful dark write. I do enjoy a good classic vampire tale. This has a really great flow to it, a nice touch with the alliteration. I've seen the world bleed in bitter bloodshed with bombs that blossom into beautiful blitzes, a musical myriad of misanthropic melodies. And what I really like about this is this takes me to a really good vampire tale, like Interview with a Vampire, to where you know they've seen things throughout history. And here's a vampire that has seen the bombs of the world wars and all the ugliness of life and of humanity. And I like their shallow struggles sate my hunger. I feed on the visceral fix of a fading pulse, haunting the quiet place of solitude with leather-clad lachrymosis laments, my undead life, the curse of everlasting disdain. There's always to me a dark sensuality with vampires, but I like that he chose to use the word disdain. Because to me, here's someone who has seen so much, as I said, the ugliness of humanity, the weaknesses of humanity, that they are left with nothing but a sense of hunger and a sense of just absolute repulsion and disdain for these weak creatures. So just an excellent dark write and very well done.
Great comment there, Pam. Thank you. This did remind me of Lestat de Lioncourt because of the thoughts within it. The alliteration was great. A musical myriad of misanthropic melodies. That's what got that. dance the darkness and deadly discord, dwelling beyond the twilight of drowning dreams. My stealth stalks the steps of strangers as crimson lights sweetly smear my lips. What a grand roll of alliteration and thought. And to keep it going, the shallow struggles sate my hunger. I feed on the visceral fix of a fading pulse. And then to thump my undead life, the curse of the waste, and disdain to ever forage brooding bastions of blood. That had me thinking of another vampire, Forever Knight, and his disdain for the fact that he's cursed to live out his life wanting blood and not take, well, in his case, he refused to take life. He had bottles of cow blood in his refrigerator to help him with those dark moments. All right, Pam, we're coming back to you.
Absolutely. So, yeah, great comment there, Rex. So Eric says, Rex, your vocal cords takes brilliant poetry and intensifies its meaning. The clarity sound brings is totally awesome. And I have to absolutely agree with that. Well said there, Eric. And
nice. Thank you, Eric.
Absolutely. He also asked what he's supposed to wear for the upcoming birthday party. And I said, casual, just make sure you're wearing your orange socks.
Yeah, I wonder what the hell the orange socks was.
I'm requesting everybody wear orange socks to the birthday party. All right.
And you're right, Eric. It was a gothic masterpiece.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Pants optional, babbler. You get naughty on us?
Yes, pants are optional. Oh, I like that, babbler. All right, and now we have Nimble Minded by Stan Petrovic 1.0, and it goes like this. Who's entered my cave but Socrates himself? He looked me over with an expression sour. Was I that wilting tulip and overwrought flower? He thought highly of good muscles and health. Throughout his past, he began to spy a great void lasting. The only true wisdom is knowing, and within its glowing is knowing deep down. You know nothing about nothing about. A mirror-like painting hung round my arching neck bone. What it reflects was unreal, a treachery towards my past. Intentions reinvent interventions, none of which will I ever seek. I blew out the water and intentions with a vengeance, with a dire vengeance. And if, and ultimately, when I speak, I shall speak in multitudes, better listen and better watch. I come to you from the land of beauty. Perfection always changes. It performs a second duty. When I composed reading Gaul, fear me not as I construed. Yet each man kills the thing he loves. By each let this be heard. Some do it with a bitter look, some with a flattering word. The coward does it with a kiss, the brave man with a sword. By this I stand naked before you, critics, to microscope my every pore, slice off my adipose tissues and turn it into soap, strip away my physiognomy, and to the floor below drop the gore. There I go saying it again, a curse on your doggerel, a punch to your chin. When I try to re-explain myself once more, it's time to begin. End poem.
Great read, Pam. And Stan took, I am so clever that sometimes I don't understand a single word that I'm saying. And he ran with that one. Nice. I like that. What was it? Was I that wilting tulip and overwrought flower? He thought highly of good muscles and health. Throughout his past, he began to spy. That opening stanza kind of hints at a notion of taking a trip to the old world with one of his teachers from school. They went to Rome and Greece and delved into the the life, the museums and the artifacts of that world that came before, like 1500, 2000, 2500 years beforehand. A mirror-like painting. Again, that thought with Dorian Gray comes up. Let's see what else we got here. I shall speak in multitudes, better listen and better watch. I come to you from the land of beauty. Perfection always changes. It performs a second duty. And then that thought with the next one down, Redding Gow, offering up that yet each man kills the thing he loves. By each let this be heard. Some do it with a bitter luck, some with a flattering word. The coward does it with a kiss, the brave man with a sword. There's kind of a notation there, the offering himself up as the what he loves, and he's killing it. And then he drops in that critic's microscope, my every pore, from opening up his himself in such a manner for everybody to take their pot shots. And then he hits on the back end of this, curse your doggerel, a punch to your chin, kind of a backslap at those who do not understand nor want to understand or look at that which is within his soul itself. Nicely done there, Stan. Thank you very much. All right, Pam, what you got?
Well, I really liked this. I liked that it was like the idea of coming from the point of view of Oscar Wilde. That part in quotation marks was actually the part of the poem Reading Gow by Oscar Wilde, the ballad. But I like that he fit that in there, and he put it in the quotation mark. I like because it worked well to show the voice of Oscar Wilde, to show how he felt picked apart and overly examined by Victorian society. There were a couple words I definitely stumbled over, and I apologize for that. But I did truly like that line about critics to microscope my every pores and drip the gore. Drip the gore was a wonderful line, and the whole idea of, you know, people want to tear you apart and they want to find the ugliest parts of you because that's the part that fascinates them. A great void lasting, the only true wisdom is knowing, and within its glowing is knowing deep down. You know nothing about nothing. I really like that nod towards the idea that you may think you're smart, but truly you don't know as much as you think you do. Just a clever write and very well done.
Absolutely. All right. Where are we going next?
All right. Up next, we have The Gate of Stone and Steel Matches Hers to a T by Celtic Poetress. And Rex, go ahead and give that a read for us, please.
Well, this is twisted. You took Stan when you could have taken Celtic, and I've got Celtic now that you took Stan.
They're both gender-neutral reads. Don't worry, there's no lines about you walking in your high heels or anything like that. Your masculinity will stay intact.
The Gate of Stone and Steel Matches Hers to a T by Celtic Poetry. Fear, 'tis thought for food. Wooden planks make faces, undesirable by nature. Even woodmite, balk of talk and telling tales, do flinch when faced with it. Holding up his heart, bled through carcass, encasing thoughts, shouting back thousands of times stronger, telling, storytelling of his story. Deep dread sink, a knock at the door, a rap, a singular ask, before his prestige comes barreling down and thoughts tumble as if they wish to be spilled. Twisted in agony, encased in stone, wood mites barreling away, rotten flesh falling from long-forgotten bones into the ocean, all that's left is steely stone, waiting for her to carve. She carves away in stone black set to show others what she wishes them to think. She sits carving, masks, stone masks made of petrified stone, each mask created from stone. Each stone created by a moment twisting deep and black, one that breaks away just a little bit of love and faith. Each time its wayward hands bring dizzying tears through her lashes. He wears a broken mask, one that tried to conceal, but showed instead his autobiographical thought. She wears a new, harder mask each day, set in stone and steel, concealing, showing only which she deems a suitable lot, the way it shall always dine to be. End point. All right, Pam. What you got?
All right. Well, great read there, Rex. I really liked the powerful imagery in this one. Even the title itself, The Gate of Stone and Steel, matches hers to a T. And I like that too, where with, you know, the word gate is in a walk, G-A-I-T, but yet it could sound like the other word gate, G-A-T-E, which works well with the stone and steel. So right away you get a play on words. Really nice flow to this. I liked that she brought in such things as wood mites. Even wood mites walk of talk and telling tales do flinch when faced with it. I thought that using the wood mites was a great choice, and that they just constantly pick, you know, they're constantly irritating. Twisted in agony, encased in stone, wood mites barreling away, rotten flesh falling from long forgotten bones into the ocean. All that's left is steely stone waiting for her to carve, and she carves away. There's this idea of someone who gets stronger with each pain that they go through, with each disappointment that they go through. And I like how it's about carving out those different masks and those different masks that we've learned to put on and conceal our emotions, because too oftentimes people take advantage of emotions. So I thought this was a beautiful emotive write and very well done.
Yeah, she hits on that notion up right. Fear, 'tis thought for food. Wooden planks make faces. Undesirable nature, even wood mites balk of talk and telling tales. You flinched when faced with it. That kind of hits on the notion of aging and how wood, when it ages, it cracks and it holds out those little spots where things can crawl into and eat away further at the surface. All right. Deep dread sinks, a knock at the door, a rap, a single ask, before its prestige comes barreling down, and thoughts tumble as if they wish to be spilled. Now, she hits on both angles, both man and woman in this, which was a nice touch. And I like the thought she carves away in stone black set to show others what she wishes them to think. There is that obvious notion of placation, where one creates a mask for each individual occasion and a set of circumstances. So she can either be read easily or not read at all. And that's kind of what she hits on, showing only which she deems a suitable lie as the finishing note, the way it shall always dine to be. Instead of deign, dine to be is that notion of, hey, we get through life by dining in those things that we play with, whether it's dating, movies, meeting somebody, working with friends, or talking to somebody you can't stand. There's always a face for a particular angle, and I guess women do it better than men.
Yeah, they do. Great comment there, Rex. All right. Up next, we have do Happiness Principle by Rose Winter 515. And it goes like this. I quote Oscar Wilde with freedom, flowers, books, and the moon. Who could not be perfectly happy? Come and read books, escape into different worlds of time, and see things virtually. The whole globe is a stage of joy and happiness, bliss and sadness, but we can choose to hope and pray for salvation. Earth will survive, and so shall we remember togetherness is best. Fly to be free, sail away to liberty, fly to be free, fly over to me. Be my honeybee, be my honeysuckle, be my sunshine, come and be free. Buzz to the moon and walk in space, dream an incredible dream of world peace. End poem.
And Rose took, with freedom, flowers, books, and the moon, who could not be perfectly happy? And actually, there is that notion that walks right through this, the happiness principle. It's kind of a mantra thought with that. And I like that last stanza, buzz to the moon and walk in space, dream an incredible dream of world peace. Now, buzz to the moon, as soon as I saw that, first thing I had, Buzz Lightyear from way back when. And also the be my honeybee, be my honeysuckle, be my sunshine, come and be free. Or does that delve into the thoughts of freedom, flowers, books, and the moon itself? You know what? Why not be happy with such things? Freedom, flowers, books, and the moon. There's much to be delved in that beauty. And you can be happy with it. Nice. I like that. You got to read it. How about you?
Well, it was a delight. It was a delight to read. I love the positive energy of this poem. You know, I like that it reminds us that, you know, that there is sadness in the world, but that we can choose to hope. I really like how she repeats the words, fly to be free, fly over to me, be my honeybee, be my honeysuckle, be my sunshine, come and be free. There's this wonderful idea of togetherness. And I like that it takes us all the way from just enjoying the simple things of life, such as books and flowers, to those epic dreams of world peace. So I thought this was beautifully written and very well done.
Nice. All right. Where shall we travel next?
All right. As we travel along this bumpy road, we land on Salmon Breakdancing by S. Sharp. And Rex, go ahead, give that a read for us.
Salmon, Breakdancing by S. Sharp. Sidewalks flow with salmon swimming up street. Big sea fish jumping up, down, 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 searching for their natal waters, fighting the flow of life to lay their eggs in their spawning ground, like all other salmon. One generation to the next, like parents, like child, teacher begets teacher, fireman begets fireman, fish begets fish, migrating upstream, jumping through hoops, mindless cycles of repetition. Sometime, I just hope to see some salmon doing handstands or cartwheels, or maybe some breakdancing. End poem. And he took, most people are other people. Their thoughts are someone else's opinions. Their lives are mimicry. Their passions are quotations. All right, Pam, what you got?
I really liked this one. It was clever. It was fun. It had a wonderful sense of humor. It was a strong write on the whole idea that oftentimes from generation to generation, we follow what our family's expectations is. You know, take over that family business, take over that family mindset, never truly getting that opportunity to think for yourself. I really like how the imagery of salmon dancing, you know, and just because the imagery in itself is humorous, but it also gives you this idea of all of a sudden these salmon that have always been following the same path just suddenly breaking out into something different. I really liked migrating upstream, jumping through hoops, mindless cycles of repetition. Sometimes I just hope to see some salmon doing headstands or cartwheels or maybe some break dancing. And I like how that takes a look at the idea of salmon being people, being the representation of the blasé and the everyday, and you're looking around going, can't somebody do something interesting? Why do you all have to be so boring? I just, you know, like I said, I thought this was clever and fun. It actually reminded me of, we had this big amount of flooding when I was a kid one spring, and there was actually minnows swimming across the road. And I'll never forget that because it is something that stands out. It is something different. You don't usually see minnows swimming across the road. And so that's what that made me think of. Not much to do with the poem itself other than that's just what it made me think of. So excellent write and very well done.
Well said. All right. Okay. Kind of hits me with the thought of the illusion of big city living. It's supposed to be all of these things you can do, but the thought is sidewalks flow with salmon swimming upstream, big city fish jumping uptown, downtown, searching for their natal waters. And then again, the next one generation to the next, like parent, like child. Teacher begets teacher, fireman begets fireman, fish begets fish. And it's the same cycle of repetition because they've ingrained themselves into a singularity of, hey, this is what my father did, this is what my mother did, this is what we do generationally, because it's expected in the big city that those that do certain things will always do those things because they've been doing it for generations. And like the salmon swimming upstream, they die to get back to their birthplace just so they can lay their eggs for the next generation, which is exactly what this is hinting at. And that back end of the sort of just seeing, just being able to see something different in the big city outside of the thought of the normal flow of things. Just a little twinge of something outside the norm would be a sparkle in the eye. All right. Where would you like
Absolutely.
To go next?
Well said there, Rex. And up next we have, let me grab the next one. And all right. We have Depending on My Mood by Linda Evans. And it goes like this. Creating a new me every day, dawn streaking across the sky, I lie, staring at my bedroom ceiling, trying to gauge precisely how, right here, right now, I'm feeling. Casting aside slumbering cats and crumpled cotton sheets, either sprightly rising or dismally falling, already before the day is even vaguely underway. Struggling to survive only a few dreams, as yet not shattered to smithereens, still keeping me alive. And poem.
Great read, Pam. And Linda took that quote. We're all in the gutter. Some of us are looking at stars. Oh, that guy. And you did it with just 68 words. Okay. And it kind of hits at the sort of rolling into another quote, the one about women's faces and makeup and that angle. Creating a new me every day, dawn streaking across the sky. Oh, nice opening. Staring at my bedroom ceiling, trying to gauge precisely how, right here, right now, I'm feeling. I kind of hint at kind of a moment of clarity as to, is this going to be a good day or is this going to be a bad day? And then the thought of, I like that, it was slumbering cats and crumpled cotton sheets, sprightly rising or dismally falling, already before the day is even vaguely underway. All right, there's a nice counterpoint, sprightly rising or dismally falling. So there's kind of an aside to, how is it going to be? Am I still going to be asleep when I get out of bed and I fall flat on my face? Or will I dash to the bathroom because I need to go? And then that thought in the back end of this, struggling to survive, only a few dreams as yet not shattered, the smithereens still keeping me alive. Kind of hits on that idea of, there's a little bit of angst, anxiety that walks within this to the point where how are things going to be, because life isn't as grand as one might want it to be. And how about you? You got to read it.
Great observations there, Rex. I have to agree, there is a sense of anxiety, and also a sense of depression. You know, I like that she has the looking up at the ceiling, staring at my bedroom ceiling, trying to gauge precisely how right here, right now, I'm feeling. There is that oftentimes when you first wake up in the morning, you just stare up and you try to figure out how you're feeling, if you feel like you can face life, if you can feel like you can face the day. I like that she has little details like slumbering cats and crumpled cotton sheets, which was wonderful alliteration. But then the idea of, you know, how am I going to face this day when so many dreams have been shattered, and there's that idea of, you know, am I going to get up this morning? Am I going to go through life and find at the end of this day one more dream has been smashed to pieces? So just excellent write and very well done.
Nicely said. All right. Dun, 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 dun. Where do we go now?
All right. Up next we have Marble by Ilex Adder. And go ahead, give that a read for us, please.
Marble by Ilex Adder. You smiled. Ivory glinting between burgundy lips. Magic sparking from every strand of your illuminated hair, shining with gold under a midnight sun. And my mind was instantly filled with every marvel I had the pleasure of beholding in our fractured world, all of which I would eagerly sacrifice if I had but one chance to gaze into your eyes, return your unadulterated joy, and be given the words to convey for just a moment how you looked at that perfect beginning. And Ilex took, the world has changed because you are made of ivory and gold. The curves of your lips rewrite history. All right. What did you think?
I thought this was just absolutely beautiful, a wonderful take on the prompt. I really like the lines, magic sparking from every strand of your illuminated hair, shining with gold under a midnight sun. Wonderful use of the phrase midnight sun, and all of which I would eagerly sacrifice if I had but one chance to gaze into your eyes, return your unadulterated joy, and be given the words to convey just for a moment how you looked at that perfect beginning. I like that whole idea of when you first see that spark of love, that spark of admiration in somebody's eyes, and you wish you could go back, and you wish you could capture it, and you wish you could return it. I just think this is a beautifully expressed write and very well done.
Absolutely. I'm going to go with struck, dumbfounded in the moment, without a single word to offer, still enamored in the moment, because that last stanza kind of hits it all, and be given the words to convey for just a moment how you looked at that perfect beginning. that perfect beginning being the notice, back that eyes met, so to speak, in that moment, or a glint of a smile, which offered up at the opening. You smiled, ivory glinting. But everything from then on out was the full description of that notation and that maybe a cursory meeting, maybe a chance, but lost in the moment because it struck such a hardcore that they were left without words. And that kind of hits on that notion of a moment passing, but still remembering it. Nicely done, Ilix. Thank you.
Absolutely. I really like how you mentioned that it hits on the idea of a moment passing. Still remember.
Went to all that trouble of laying out what that moment meant, and then offers up that last thought of, and give me the grace of a few words so I can convey that message, but there's nothing there.
Yep, exactly. So it's almost... It's a memory that there's a certain sense of emptiness to. So, great observation there, Rex. All right. Up next, we have Preening My Feathers by Jesna Sajan. And it goes like this. Preening my feathers, looking squeaky clean, I can fly swiftly high, aiming high, lean, for my insulation, weatherproofing, look, rainbow, colorful plan, mating. I preen my feathers with my beak, silently peering my flock might seek. Sun is at the horizon, someone drops a packet, leftover food left by people on a sacket. I pushed the fellow nearby, swiftly grabbed my treat. I eyed some rice and fruit petals, munched on them sweet. Fellows looked at me grinning, saw my beak working. My preening work was hastened. Now my appetite is cooking. End poem.
Great read, Pam. And Desmond took, I have simple tastes. I am always satisfied with the best. But there was also a hint to that that thought about women, too, because of the opening with preening my feathers, looking squeaky clean. And then the back end, I pushed a fellow nearby. Swiftly grabbed my treat, eyes and rice and fruit peels, munching them sweet. Fellows looked at me grinning, saw my beak working. My preening work was hastened. Now my appetite is cooking. Nice humor in this too, and it hits on that sort of both the desire for mating, because she hits on that up on the first stanza at the back end. Look, rainbow, colorful, plain mating. So again, that kind of the preening going to the ritual of, as you put it, war paint. But this was funny, done with a thought to using birds as the angle to imply the beauty that is needed to bring forth. You done, Jasna? Thank you. All right. How about you?
All right. Well, I really liked this one. I like that she decided to personify a bird. And she just, you're right, it's humorous, it's smile-inducing. She shows us this personality of this bird, but she also uses the bird as almost like a metaphor for those type of people who just preen themselves, you know, looking for the next date, looking for the next treat. Looking for everybody to admire them. I just thought this was absolutely delightful. I really enjoyed the picture she gave us of this bird and his daily life and how much he truly just admired himself and knew that everybody else should admire him. So I thought that was very well done. And since we have 10 minutes left and I believe no more poems, I'm going to read one of mine. Let me check. All right.
This might be dangerous.
Uh-oh. What's going to be dangerous?
that you brought something wild along.
No, well, sorry, I couldn't find anything Oscar Wilde, and I was going to read a serious brevity, but then I thought, you know what, I wrote this humor poem for Gray's show, and it's a dark humor poem that I thought, you know what, I think Rex will appreciate this one. So just for amusement, I brought this poem.
Oh, yes, Frankenstein.
Yes. Written to Rocky Horror is owned by Fox. Fox was bought out by Disney. Dr. Frankenfurter is now an evil Disney queen. And this is an evil queen, and it goes like this. I'm just so very fabulous. I'm an evil Disney queen. With my strut and hot, hot buns, I will steal every scene. I love all my creations kept like proper pets. You think you know what evil is. You don't know nothing yet. I love my leather like my soul, oh so very black. And when my playthings start to drown, my butler hangs them on the rack. I'm fun and I am wicked, a modern day fox, a freaky bit of naughty with a key for every lock. Now Beauty, she is sleeping in snow, well she is dead, so bring your fine arse over here to the thoughts inside my head. Some say I am a bit too much. What can I say? I have eclectic taste. And darling, you should know I never let a kielbasa go to waste. I don't worry about being polite like those dolled-up Disney twerps. I made the beast into meatloaf, and last year's appliances are doing the time warp. Now I'm going to whisper something in your ear. Cross my heart and hope Belle dies. There's nothing here to fear. I love to sweat profusely, sweet, sexy precipitation, but most of all I like, wait for it, wait, that's right, my pet, keep on waiting. I like, no, I love to create anticipation. So, Your Highness, you can have your mermaid when you crave the taste of fish. But you come to my place when you want more meat stacked upon your dish. You thought you wanted a princess, but honey, it's time to face the facts. You've had a taste of an evil queen, and there ain't no going back. End poem.
Oh, getting down with little Frank and Ferda. Got to go with, how do you do I see you've met my faithful handy man. He's just a little brought down because when you knocked, he thought you were the Candy Man. a little tart humor. But when you hit, when you bring out that from the anticipations from the sweet transvestite, but you drop in all of this Disney stuff, and then you roll in a bit of kielbasa. Huh. I never let a kielbasa go to waste. Okay. You hinting that Disney's rolled up in sausages and there's a lot more going on with the meatloaf?
Yeah, meatloaf. The meatloaf part was a really dark humor because it was the nod towards how meatloaf's character Eddie got killed. And then he was supposed, they hinted at the idea that he was actually the meal they were eating. So that was just some really horrible dark humor, but I couldn't resist.
Nice. Well.
All right, well, that is it, unless you have something you want to share.
It's now Tuesday, so. Today is Midsummer Night's Dream, and that ought to be interesting.
Yes. Yes, that should be just a really great show. I'm looking forward to that one. You know, wonderful contest that Fill My Eyes ran. And, of course, make sure everyone to keep an eye out on all the contests put out there by our Late Night Poets hosts and hostesses. Because you're sure to find something to inspire. Now, for Wednesday, Fill My Eyes is running a contest for the Art of Seduction. which has the quote, "The wolf in me honors the full moon in you," and some pictures along that theme of bringing out your wild side that howls to the moon.
And Sunday, oh yes, bring us your offspring. That is the music for Sunday evening. What about Friday morning?
Friday morning, we have Into the Darkness, Dark Humor. I'm going to forward the contest. Yes, yes, where people have the option. I put up several different lines from your Loons series, the Loons series, Rex, and people could choose from those, or they could choose their own dark humor prompt and write to that. And I chose to do that because for two reasons. It's April 1st, which is April Fool's Day. And, of course, as we all should know by now, March 31st is your birthday. So it is a celebration. What?
Nope.
You told me it was March 31st.
No, I didn't.
Okay.
My birthday is the same day as Eric Clapton. Bar.
I don't know when Eric. Okay, so what is it?
The 30th.
Oh, okay, so I was one day off. All right, March 30th. But still, it's a dark humor dark humor show to celebrate you and to celebrate April Fools. And we've already got like 21 or 20 rights, and I'm definitely looking forward to that show. And I will
April
make sure
Fools,
to change that to March 30th. What's that?
April Fools. That ought to be interesting.
Yes, yes. I think it's going to be a great show. I think it's going to be a great show. Dang, I got that wrong. For some reason, I swore that we'd had that conversation where I guessed the 30th, and you said, no, there's one more day, and then I said the 31st, and you said yes. But obviously not. All right. Well, awesome show tonight, Rex.
Yes. A lot of fun stuff and some laughs as well, so, and some serious looks behind the scenes of Painted Faces.
Absolutely. And
all right.
Join us next week.
Great show. Thank you. And Victoria Babler, Eric, thank you for the boards. And what do you got for, what are we doing next Tuesday?
I have a contest running for next week with, who is his name again?
Stanley Kubrick.
Yes. Yes, Stanley Kubrick. That's it. Yes. So make sure to check that out, everybody.
All right. Good night, everybody. We'll see you again come next Tuesday for this show and in varying guises during the rest of the week on other shows.
Absolutely. Good night.
Good night.